I'm Mike and I'm an alcoholic. I never did say my clean date's 7/23/03, and I'm very grateful for that. My home group's Thread to Recovery, which is hosting this event. And we meet on Mondays 5:30 to 6:30 in Afton, Missouri. And on Tuesdays, we meet down in Central Service and Maplewood on it's a workshop format, and that's what today is. Instead of on Tuesdays, we moved it over to Mondays on Zoom. And, we're going to let God come in, and then Tracy's going to read.
I'm Tracy. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Tracy.
And I'm reading page 151 out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's chapter 11, A Vision for You. For most normal folks, drinking means conviviality, companionship, and colorful imagination. It means release from care, boredom, and worry. It is joyous intimacy with friends and a feeling that life is good. But not so with us in those last days of heavy drinking. The old pleasures were gone. They were but memories. Never could we recapture the great moments of the past. There was an insistent yearning to enjoy life as we once did, and a heartbreaking obsession that some new miracle of control would enable us to do it. There was always one more attempt and one more failure. The less people tolerated us, the more we withdrew from society, from life itself. As we became subjects of King Alcohol, shivering denizens of his mad realm, the chilling vapor that is loneliness settled down. It thickened, ever becoming blacker. Some of us sought out sordid places, hoping to find understanding, companionship, and approval. Momentarily, we did. Then would come oblivion and the awful awakening to face the hideous four horsemen. Terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair. Unhappy drinkers who read this page will understand.
Thank you, Tracy. Now we turn it over to Joe and let him take off.
Hey, Tracy. Thanks, Mike. My name is Joe Carver, and I'm an alcoholic. The Buffalo Chapter 2 group in Buffalo, Missouri is my home group, and my sobriety date is August the 15th of 2014. That is my most current sobriety date. Sometimes people ask me how long I've been sober, and I ask them, do you want gross or net? Because it took me a while to put a permanent sobriety date together. I know Mike knows me. I know he doesn't have any expectations because he's heard me before. So much for anonymity. I am sitting in my truck outside of my hardware store, and as you can see, my name and phone number in my back glass backwards with the backward thing there. So I guess if you want to call me, there it is. We'll get to the hardware store in a moment. It wasn't always that way. Mike asked me a couple years ago to speak on the Four Horsemen up in St. Louis. And at that time, I literally had to go to the book and do what I've done a lot of times and actually get a dictionary out and look at what each one of those meant. And when I did, that paragraph that was just read took on complete new meaning. I realized at that point, whenever I just looked the definitions up and how I experienced that a lot in sobriety, telling everyone that I was okay and that everything was great, and then opening my book and seeing where I printed those out and looking at those definitions again and going, you know, I'm not okay. I'll give you a little bit of background. I know this is supposed to be on the Four Horsemen. I'll get there. I did not have the privilege of listening to any of the other speakers. I don't know whether that's going to be a good thing or a bad thing. Extremely nervous. I seen the participant list, and I should not have. It is down, which is awesome. I clicked on a little bit ago to make sure I had everything right, and there's like 120 people, and I was like, oh my. But I had an old man one time tell me whenever I was getting ready to speak in Kansas, that if you're not nervous among your peers, then you should check your humility level. So I'm glad that I'm okay, because I'm extremely nervous. I am right now in Buffalo, Missouri. This is where I was born and raised. It's a little town just north of Springfield, Missouri. About 3,000 people, very rural, farming. This is the first time I think I spoke. I was going to bring a coat and tie. I hope my sponsor doesn't see this, because it probably should be in a coat and tie. If you don't believe I'm sober, then I ought to at least appear like I'm sober. So I generally put that on. That would have been weird, in a suit and tie in my truck out back of my hardware store. My parents were great. I had a wonderful childhood. I do not have a story of a hellacious growing up. My parents are still married today. Wonderful people. Always told me that I could do whatever I wanted to do. But I never felt that. I know that whenever I printed out the definitions of the four horsemen, I had those feelings in the sixth grade. I remember one time being at Sunday school, and I must have had a little look on my face, and the Sunday school teacher comes by, and she says, Joe, you know, everything's going to be okay. You know, Jesus loves you. And my thought process was, well, then he has very poor taste. I didn't say it out loud, but that's how I felt. And I excelled in school. My grandpa was an alcoholic. I put two and two together, because my dad and he didn't have a very good relationship. There was no alcohol in my home. There was teetotaled there. And my grandpa didn't show up for my baseball games. He wasn't at Christmas very long. And I got a little older, and I wanted to go by his shop. And I was just a little discouraged by that, because every time I showed up, he was pretty drunk. And I vowed that I was never going to be like my grandpa. And I ran around with the rough crowd in school, but I didn't drink. And then I joined the Army. And after boot camp and AIT, we rented a little motel room. And I was 18, had a gun to defend my country. I'm not my grandpa. I can have just a beer with my guys. And I don't remember much of that night. I remember what I was told of that night, and I remember the next morning around 10 a.m. asking my friends if it was too early to do that again. Alcohol did something for me, to me, that nothing else had ever come close. I had never been okay with just being Joe. You know, I needed to be Joe the lifeguard, Joe the class clown, Joe with the fastest car in school, Joe that was the baseball star, Joe that had the, you know, it was never okay just to be Joe. And as soon as I took that drink, it was okay just to be me. And we got to permanent party, and I wanted that feeling all the time. All the time. And I did my best to get that feeling all the time. Shot 40 out of 40 Hawkeye, made rank really fast. Things went by really fast because I was drunk all the time. And then I got a DWI on post, and I had been in the motor pool, and I was working on one of the General's Chevy trucks weekends, and Desert Storm had just finished up, and he said, you know, I can let you slide out of here with an honorable discharge and just let you go home, or you can be knocked back and try to do all this over again. So I went home. That is an amends process that I still have extreme trouble with today. I did not feel fulfill my commitment. I didn't get the whole 4 years in. And I signed on the line for the whole 4 years. And I got to come home a little early because of my actions with no consequences. I have no idea how to take care of that. I've got guys that I haven't seen since then that I need to somehow find to make some amends with. And so I got home and proceeded to get that feeling all the time. I still got my paper from where I printed it out, the definitions of the four horsemen. And right before that, it says, then would come oblivion and the awful awakening to face the hideous four horsemen, state of being unaware or unconscious of what has happened. And I was absolutely unaware and unconscious of what was going on in my world. I was completely unaware and unconscious that anything was my fault. It was always her fault, the boss's fault, the cop's fault, whatever it might be. And I didn't understand at that time any of these four horsemen, you know, the terror. I knew that. And that is the feeling of being upset or annoyed, especially because of the inability to change or achieve something. And I couldn't change things. I couldn't change the way she treated me. I couldn't change the amount of money that I had in my account. And I knew that there was a lot of frustration. I proceeded. Many jobs like most alcoholics do. I worked on cars in school. I was a mechanic in the military. I got out, turned some wrenches, sold some auto parts, everything in the car field in my spare time. I helped some guys remodel houses and we flipped houses. So in the mechanic and the construction field, there was nothing wrong with the drinking the whole time. I never looked for a job, never attempted to get a job that might be anywhere close to where I couldn't drink the way I wanted to drink. Throughout the course of the years, the rest of these four horsemen started coming in. Bewilderment is a confusion resulting from failure to understand. People experience bewilderment when they are utterly baffled by the situation at hand. And while I was drinking and that girl is packing up her stuff, I was utterly baffled by the situation at hand. I mean, I was a great guy. I didn't hit anybody. I didn't throw things. I made money. I had nice stuff. I always had hot rods and boats and motorcycles, and we paid the bills. Why would she be leaving? You know, utterly baffled in bewilderment. It just put that on repeat. So many different girlfriends, had four hostages. Some people call them wives. Had one for 3 months. We got married. 3 months later, she decided she didn't want any part of this. I haven't seen her since. And just didn't know why. Got a couple of DWIs, the drunken disorderlies. I'm in a really rural town. We have had one bar, and I was banned from it for life 4 or 5 different times. You know, you wait 6 months and show back up and tell them I won't do that again. And not do that again for a while, and then proceed to break a bunch of their furniture and, you know, all those things. I had a laundry list of convictions and charges, and it utterly baffled me on how my life had gone. You know, I had everything looking up for me. Everything was good. I got a wonderful family. My dad was on city council. My mom's cook at school. My uncle's the fire chief. And here I am on the front page of this newspaper they put out every week. To say I was the black sheep would have put it mildly. I don't really know anybody else in my family or extended family, cousins included, that's ever seen handcuffs except for me. I knew that I was... I knew that I had fears, I had inadequacy fears and things like that, but that's normal, everybody does, right? A couple of things, then we'll get on to finding Alcoholics Anonymous. Live in a very small town, had a little town, and she, at the time, was very tired of me, and I think I had an unlawful use of a weapon and a DWI two different occasions pending. The bail bondsman was super upset that I had met up with his girlfriend one night at the bar, so he revoked my bond, and they would come and bang on the door, and we've all played a little bit of that bang, 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 and you just don't say anything, and everybody's quiet, and then they go away. They'll try to serve that warrant again tomorrow. And one night, I'd just gone to bed. I mean, just laid down in the bed, and I hear her go, "Yep, he's in there." So I jump up, and there was a basement. I ran down the basement stairs, and I hear thump, 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 thump all across the top, and then I hear her say, "Have you looked downstairs?" And so I proceeded to go out the basement door, only to make it 20 feet, and it was 25 degrees and a little skip of snow, and I was naked. So I proceeded to circle my way back around to the barn, but they're going to find me in the barn. And my best thinking led me to this large chicken house that I had. And when the deputy found me naked in the chicken house, they sprayed me off with a hose because I had chicken stuff all over me. And in that newspaper that I spoke of, once a week, they put your arrests and the things that's going on. And they didn't need to, but I guess they felt the need to, you know, after a lengthy search, Mr. Carver was apprehended naked in his chicken house. That was 1999. And as the book talks about, gradually things got worse. And I ended up on probation more times than I'd care to say. And I ended up in prison. They don't like it when you have guns when you're intoxicated. They don't like the assault charges. We'll talk about those here in a little bit when we get into some recovery. But I had I got to this point where I didn't really want to quit drinking, but I really wanted to quit going through women and quit going to jail and prison. And that a probation officer and a prosecuting attorney saved my life. My public defender came to me and said that the prosecutor told him and the judge that I was not a criminal, that I was an alcoholic that needed some help. And Springfield, Missouri is about 45 minutes from here. And there's a fellow that is now passed. His name's John Bayless. Those three people saved my life. Within a couple of days, my probation officer changed my stuff, and John had a little sobriety house there in Springfield, and he owned a salvage yard. And I went to that sobriety house, and I went to work for him at that salvage yard. And I found Alcoholics Anonymous. And like many people's stories, I went to a lot of meetings, and I got in the book, and I started working steps, and I started doing the next right thing, and my life changed. And that was in 2008. I don't think I had a real grasp of these four horsemen at that time. I didn't really get the terror. Terror implies an intense fear that somewhat prolonged and may refer to imagined or future dangers. Despair was the complete loss of hope, the feeling that everything is wrong and nothing will improve. I didn't have those. I'm a guy that rolls on hope. You know, she's broke up with me. I sent her 4,000 text messages. She sends one back that says, screw you, and I have hope. I mean, she did send me a message back. I mean, she is communicating that, right? So that's some hope. And I'm a guy that rolls on hope, even if it's that a little bit. So I really got into those four horsemen, as the book talks about. And so I'd been around Alcoholics Anonymous for a little bit, and I decided that I was okay. And I had what I commonly refer to as the AA Trinity, the girl, the job, and the car. And once I got the girl, the job, and the car, then I don't really need Alcoholics Anonymous anymore. I mean, I've got this thing figured out. Haven't had a drink in like 7-8 months. So going to all these meetings and stuff, that's great for you guys, but I think I'm okay. And I proceeded to do that from 2008 to 2014. And from 2008 until 2012, that man that I spoke of continued to be there every time I drug my butt back in the room. He just passed away a few months ago, so this is kind of rough. He was always there. It wasn't always nice. I mean, 30 years sober and complete asshole. And I loved him to death. Yeah. Put his arms around me and asked me what I was going to do different. And as long as the fire was on, I was ready to do something different. And the fire was on, and I was ready to do something different. The end of 2013, after a little bit of sobriety, I don't even want to call it sobriety, abstinence, going to some meetings, I moved back to my little hometown here in Buffalo, and I did what a lot of alcoholics do whenever they don't like to get told what to do. You know, you start your own business, right? So you're the boss, so you can do whatever you want to do. I started remodeling houses, remodeling bathrooms, remodeling kitchens, doing stuff like that. And it was great. And man, the girl, the job, the car, that it was all great. And it worked really, 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 really good right up to the day that it didn't. And I still did not have a solution. And I found myself holed up at the Battlefield Inn in Springfield. It was a little dope motel, $20 a night motel. And I was there 5-6 days, and I had paid my bill, but Hubob still wanted me to go. He was still ready for me to leave his dope motel. So I was getting kicked out of the dope motel. And in kicked in the terror, that intense fear, and in kicked in the despair that everything was wrong and nothing was going to improve. The bewilderment was there. I didn't understand still yet, and the frustration was in full effect too. The oblivion, that unaware or unconscious, was gone, and it was full on four horsemen at my door. There were two guys that had continued to take some text messages and phone calls from me during that period. Dale and Nick was not the type to not take my phone call. They were the guys that would still take my phone call, and they were the guys that still told me that I needed to actually do the program. And they were Nick worked for John, and he was of the same sponsor lineage. He told me the same things that John told me. And and I didn't know it, but the four horsemen were on my back, and I was done. I came dragging back into Alcoholics Anonymous, and there were a ton of people that looked over and shrugged their shoulders and said, "Yeah, there's Joe again. We'll see how long he lasts this time." And I asked my my current sponsor one night, who had gone to his home group for years, and I loved that home group because they were the only ones in town that had cookies. And I didn't have a lot of money. I didn't eat well, but they had cookies and they had food. And so I loved that one. I loved going to that one. I asked him one night after the meeting, I asked him if he'd be my sponsor. And he looked at me over his glasses and he said, "Joe, I really don't have time to screw with you." And I was taken aback and I didn't know what to say. And I did what every alcoholic that comes running back to the rooms of AA says. This time it'll be different. This time I'm serious. This time I mean it. This time I'm going to do the deal. And he said, "Okay." He said, "I was just elected as delegate for our area," which I didn't know what any of that meant. And he said, "You go everywhere I go and you be everywhere I am. And you never tell me no. And the first time you tell me no, then I'm done." I said, "Okay." I did not know what that entailed. All I knew is that those four horsemen were there. I had been sober for 2 or 3 weeks. I'd been going to some meetings for 2 or 3 weeks. I was physically sober, but I was still had an intense fear. I still had terror all over me. I was bewildered with the confusion of I've been going to AAA. I don't know why this thing's not working. I didn't understand that bewilderment. I didn't understand. And the frustration, I was so frustrated with the inability to do anything different. And despair was all over me. I had a complete loss of hope. I didn't think anything was going to get any better. The four horsemen were just prevalent in every single thing that I did. Everything. I didn't know what that entailed, and yet I still did it. And I mean, he would tell me things. He would say, "We're going to districts this Sunday." And I didn't say it, but I'm thinking, it's not even baseball season. Why are we going to districts? Who's playing? I didn't know what was going on of any of that. I still had my little remodel gig, and he would tell me to meet him here at 5 o'clock. And you know, don't you understand, construction guys, we don't stop at 5 o'clock, you know, stuff like that. But I didn't say it. I put my tools down and I went and met him. And I don't think until all four horsemen were on me at the exact same time that the pain was ever great enough for me to actually do what was instructed of me to do. When they were, and then I started being willing to do some things different. I didn't know anything about service. You know, I'd make coffee and then tell everybody that I made the coffee. you know, so that everybody knew. Help put up chairs, call my sponsor and let him know how great of a chair putter upper I was. But I didn't know about doing anything if it didn't involve me getting something in return. I had no clue. And he was in service structure, and so we started doing the service things, and that absolutely changed my life. Absolutely changed my life. At some point, I had that triangle, and it wasn't the girl, the job, and the car. It was the service, the unity, and the recovery. I started doing all three of those things, and my life changed. And from August the 15th of 2014 until now, I've always been in some sort of service position. Currently, the DCM for the district that this little town is in. Chaired the hotel convention last year, been the CPC chair for area. I'm not going to give you a big resume, but I've always been doing something that involved some kind of service work. So I'm sober and everything seems to be going my way. And that old man, John, that had the salvage yard used to make me answer people's question on, Joe, how are you doing? And I had to answer them one of two ways. I had to either answer them, I'm getting my way today, or I'm not getting my way today, which meant having a horrible day or I'm having a great day. If I'm having a horrible day, I'm not getting my way. And if I'm having a great day, it's because I'm getting my way. So instead of saying I'm having a horrible day or I'm having a great day, he made me answer truthfully on I'm not getting my way today, or I'm getting my way today. And I started getting my way in a lot of things. Things looked up. Things were pretty good. And for once in my life, I put that together with me doing and being in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, one of the biggest lies I ever told was I told somebody that I was in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous from 2008 to 2014. No, I wasn't. I was around Alcoholics Anonymous, but I was never in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was a spectator and a cheerleader, and I put my fire out and a selfish, self-centered, let you help me put my life back together. But I was never in Alcoholics Anonymous. When I started doing the things that people do that are in Alcoholics Anonymous, then I could have a good day even when things did not go my way. Even when everything did not go my way the entire day, I can still tell you that I've had a good day. Never experienced that before in my life. Never felt that way at 10 years old, 15 years old, 20 years old. I never felt that way. My life is a little crazy. I had that construction company remodeling, and it went very well. I was able to schedule my way around conventions and service work, things that I wanted to do. I did not want to go to a monastery in Arkansas with my great, great, great grand sponsor, but he asked me to go with him. And I went down there and I met a girl at about a year sober who did not want to go from right down the street. She'd been going to meetings and staying sober for 2 years. I've been going to meetings and staying sober for about a year, going to meetings a mile apart and never met. And we met down there and we dated and we seen each other on the weekends. And she's now my wife. Wonderful, wonderful woman. Works with girls. Great example of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't have anything to do with it. I wish I could say I did, but she kind of started following me around the server structure a little bit, and she fell in love with it as well. And we get to do that together. She's our area treatment chair right now. We go to area assembly. I still stay in a room with my sponsor and guys, and she stays on another floor with her girls. And we do Alcoholics Anonymous, not date weekend or date night. 10 o'clock, 10 p.m. on my honeymoon. We're at a rustic cabin in Arkansas, and she's on the phone with a drunk girl. Not how I really expected my honeymoon to go, but that's what we do. And so in that whole thing, the business, the wife, and you know, I got stepkids all of a sudden that are 14, 15, 16, I don't know, the real pain in the butt ages right through there. All of a sudden, at points and times, these four horsemen sneak back up. All of a sudden, no clue how, why, but an intense fear comes rolling in, and bewilderment, complete not understanding of how things are going, frustration. Not everybody's doing what I want them to do. Despair. Nothing's ever going to change. Nothing's ever going to change. As you can see by the little bit of change in, there's big storms coming in right here. So it got darker, and I hope I'm still with you guys. I tore my bicep, and I was going to go back to I went back to work for the guy at the salvage yard for a few months to see what was going to happen and see what was going to go down. He got prostate cancer again and was not having a very good go of it. And Nick, who I mentioned earlier, and myself, we quit what we were doing, and we went over to try to help him. Salvage yard was probably not going to make it without John around, and we were doing our darndest to try to help. And last January, the fella that owned the kind of sort of hardware store in Buffalo, it wasn't really a hardware store. I mean, it was, but it had like a bow range in it, and very little plumbing, very little stuff, but a nice building and a nice location. Called me on my way to the salvage yard and said, Joe, I've asked you a few times. You really need to buy this hardware store. And I don't really want to buy a hardware store. He said, well, come talk to me. I got a deal that you can't refuse. And so I did. And I went and talked to him. And I had $500. We just had some car troubles. And we got this. And we spent the money on this. And I tore my biceps, so I wasn't working a lot. My wife had just taken a job as a peer specialist. I'm going to be a counselor, and not full time. And over the course of time, I would call him with these life-changing things, and they were so life-changing that I couldn't tell you what any of them were right now. But he would look at me and he'd go, dude, just flip a coin and hang up. And so we prayed about the hardware store, and we prayed about this. And one night I looked at her and I said, heads, we're going to buy a hardware store. Door and tails were not, and it was heads. And so we went into this gig, and we went into this deal, tore out all the bow range, started putting inventory in as would have it. The store made $1,000 that week. I bought $1,000 worth of more inventory. Life had been good. We had We bought a rent house, and I had a home inspection business going, had the construction thing going, quit all those, no construction, no home inspection business, sold rent house, and focused on the hardware store. We decided that it was going to be a service to the community, honest and fair, and let God figure out all the money. And he has. And it has been absolutely phenomenal. Despite my best efforts as not a great businessman to figure it out. But let me tell you, whenever when you screw up something and you order something and you thought you had dating on it, and all of a sudden you realize you don't, the terror kicks in, and the frustration kicks in. And then whenever it's making its bills, yet it's not getting to be where I wanted it to be, the frustration is there because things aren't going as fast as I want them to be. We're not growing as fast as I want them to grow. And the despair, which is the complete loss of hope. You know, it's never going to be any better than this. It's never going to do this. But God has taken care of every single thing. We had projections for a dollar amount. And whenever we hit a year, it was exactly three times that dollar amount. And the community, small community, has rallied around, you know, everything that I do in the store, I know how to put in because of my experience. They come for experience, strength, and hope. The guys at the AA meetings always know they can come to the hardware store anytime they want, and they do. And there's some days I don't get anything done because some guy's butt's falling off, and I've talked to him in between customers for 4 hours. The tornado sirens are going off. I'm from the Midwest, so I don't see a tornado, so probably okay. So now a little bit of terror comes in, you know, is this going to be where I go? Like, going to be a Zoom meeting at my hardware store, and then you guys are going to be like watching Twister, and I'm going to have a belt tied around the pipe, you know, to keep me from flying off. So every one of these four horsemen can come back, you know. I've learned that I am not, I'm not immune to the four horsemen at all. Terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair, they can all come back at any given minute, at any given second. That's just part of it. I don't know what life's bringing me here in the future. My wife and I, one of her daughters, has a baby that at 3 weeks old had a heart problem, and right now is at the Children's Hospital in St. Louis. We think, like I'm a doctor, right? They think they got it figured out, and she's going to be okay. But let me tell you, the four horsemen will pop right back in. You get a phone call that your grandbaby's headed to the Children's Hospital in St. Louis, and there's a pandemic going on, and you can't sit in the hospital in the waiting room, and you can't go in, and you're not a doctor, and there's absolutely nothing you can do. And the epitome of powerlessness comes around, and that terror kicks in. You know, that intense fear, and the bewilderment pops in, the frustration because I can't change anything, and the loss of hope, you know. Oh my, she's never going to be okay. You know, she's never going to be, everything's not going to be okay. It gets pretty scary. And, you know, during this pandemic, thank goodness for the Zoom meetings. Thank goodness for the cell phone. You know, I'm on the phone with my sponsor. I'm on the phone with my buddies in Kansas. I'm on the phone with my guys. I'm calling my sponsees. They're talking to me. Alcoholics Anonymous in the program of that, with one or two phone calls, I can always put the four horsemen in the stable and let them be there. You know, I can't imagine how I would try to be in something like this without the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, the tornado sirens are going off, and it's starting to hail on my truck. The first thing I ever bought that wasn't broken when I bought it, so because I'm a fixer-upper guy. And so I really don't want to run back inside because now it's hailing, but I am going to, I guess, we're going to show you guys a good old Missouri tornado warning in the back of my stock room here. Okay, there's pipe stuff. And, all right, well, I'm going to shut this door, and then I'm going to attempt. Okay, so the good news is it's a concrete block building. Bad news is there's, like, no middle bathroom or anything to go in. And so, you know, a little bit of terror just kicked in right there. My wife has got her other grandbaby at the house because she's watching her while mom and dad are at the hospital in St. Louis. And there's absolutely nothing I can do about it. And there's no basement there or anything. So I'm going to finish up mine here and telling you, Mike, that I really appreciate you allowing me this opportunity. And with that, I'll pass. Hey, Mike.
Yes.
Okay. This is Joe again. We lost power here for a minute, but holy shit. I think there went part of my roof. We got some serious stuff going on. I will tell you that here at the hardware store, I was able to commandeer some toilet paper, and I made a phone call to that sheriff that arrested me in the chicken house, and he sent his deputies up along with the police department, and they all went up on 65 highway and gave away like 400 rolls of toilet paper here 2 or 3 weeks ago. So that was really cool. I'll mute myself.
Pictures of that. That was pretty cool when you posted that. That touched my heart. So how you doing, Joe? Is the storm still going on, or?
We got power back, and there's part of somebody's roof in my back parking lot, and like a whole bunch of tin and insulation, and I don't even know whose roof it is, actually, but it's still storming pretty bad. My son was in watching the store, and he was like, surely he's still not talking out there with the sirens going on. And as I came in, he was like, okay, there you are. He's like, was you still out there talking during the sirens? And I said, dude, I talked up a storm, man. I talked up a storm. So yeah, I don't know though. There's like, I don't know. I tried to show a video a while ago, but I don't know if it'll show it. There's part of somebody's roof in my backyard, or my back thing back here. Wow.
At least it's quiet. It doesn't sound like it's raining or hailing.
No, it was hailing. It's raining like you wouldn't believe, though.
Joe, where are you?
Buffalo, Missouri.
Where?
Buffalo, Missouri.
Okay, thank you. Take care of yourself.
Thanks. Mike, once again, I want to thank you for allowing me the opportunity. Sorry we had a little exciting ending there. I was going to talk about that stuff.
Yeah, I know.
You know, the other day, the prosecuting attorney came in to visit me and see how I was doing. And at the same exact time, I had sold the bar some stuff. So the bar was writing me a check, and the prosecuting attorney was here to visit with me just to see how I was doing. So that was a pretty cool day. And But I'm going to get off here. We got somebody's roof over here next to me, so probably need to go make sure everybody's okay. And but appreciate the opportunity.
I appreciate you, Joe. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. You did a great job.